from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
But right now, let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our good buddy Connor Riley from Dog Nation. He was out at... or in Dallas, I should say, covering SEC Media Days. Connor, how was your trip? Did you return safely? How are we doing?
Yeah, we got back Tuesday night. We did not stay until Thursday, and there were more than a few reporters who were stuck in Dallas on Friday with the great travel bug. So glad to have been in Dallas and have been able to get home safely.
All right, let's start with UGA and then sort of spread our wings out from there. First of all, I know I had talked with you on the side because I was confused, Connor. I didn't get why Kirby didn't address in the big media room the number one thing people are talking about aside from their championship expectations, and that is, of course, the rash of driving incidents related to the program and its players continuing on after several attempts to curb them. And, of course, we know the loss of two lives a couple of years ago. So what did you make of his decision to address only local pool reporters and then the lack of questions or analysis or anything really from the assembled national media following?
Yeah, this sort of is maybe too inside baseball, but he met with the local reporters first, and I think he obviously also kind of knew that the local reporters were going to have more questions on what can be done, how things go about preventing this from keep happening. Will there be any suspensions coming from this? And so, you know, those happened behind closed doors, and those questions were addressed there. I would note that in a sit down with Chris Lowe of ESPN, and obviously they get special access because they broadcast the SEC, it appears that questions were asked there as Carson Beck, Michael Williams, and Kirby Smart all commented on it there. I mean, part of this comes to, you know, those speeches are sort of a State of the Union type speech, and he wants to give the 10,000 foot overview of the program right now, and he just, I guess, did not feel that it merited mentioning in that sort of speech. The other thing, you know, a lot of the press that asked questions there, they're looking for more local angles. That's why you saw a lot of questions about Texas, about a conference championship game, 12-team playoff, et cetera, and not so much about the continued driving issues that persist at the University of Georgia.
Yeah, I guess that's certainly one way to look at it. I guess I just felt, and I know a couple of other guys did on the radio station as well, that Connor, it's a national forum, and it's a way for the most eyes that were going to be on him at that point during that week. And, you know, it was a chance to the best of his ability, clear the air. But he chose the route he did, and we're moving on. So let's talk about on the field now. Carson Beck seemed like he had a good week at SEC Media Days. All eyes will be on him. Right now, should he be considered the best quarterback in the SEC?
I, th- think so. I think you saw that play out with the SEC media voting. He was named first team all SEC quarterback. He's done it in this league before. He was able to stay healthy all last year. That's something Quinn Ewers wasn't able to do. His downs, I don't think, were quite as down as what we saw from Jalen Milroe at times last year in the Auburn game, in that game against Michigan there. I think he's been the most consistent. And now I think heading into his second season as a starter with an array of weapons, a better understanding. Again, this time last year, he was not the official starter for Georgia. He still had to go out there and win it. This time around, he's a lot more confident. He knows that he can continue to grow his game. He does bring back the same offensive coordinator in Mike Bobo, so there's a familiarity there. There's a connection piece there. And look, we saw a few years ago the benefit of a second-year quarterback in this Georgia offense, Stetson Bennett, going from a guy who was much maligned his first year into being a Heisman Trophy finalist in his second full season as a starter here at the University of Georgia. And so I think there are a lot of people expecting Carson Beck to make a leap. Carson himself expects to improve off what he did last season. And if he does that, I don't think there's going to be much doubt about his pecking order in the SEC.
Who do you think is going to be his number one target?
I think it's going to be Dominic Lovett over the course of the season. I really liked what I saw from him out of the spring game, but there isn't an easy answer there, and I think it speaks to the wealth of pass catchers they have. Obviously, Oscar Delp is a guy that he knows and trusts very well at that tight end position. Dylan Bell got some serious praise from Malachi Starks at SEC Media Days. You've also got transfers in guys like tight end Ben Jurecek, wide receiver Colby Young. There are a lot of options on this Georgia offense. I haven't even mentioned Trevor Etienne to this point yet. But I think Dominic Lovett, because it's his second year in the system, because, you know, while he may not have had the most explosive season a year ago, still had a very solid all-around year, 54 catches, 630 receiving yards there. I think those two are really going to be able to build on the connection they had last season, and that's what's going to propel Lovett to be not just one of the top receivers on Georgia's offense, but potentially one of the top in the SEC.
Moving on to a couple of other major topics from SEC Media Days as we talk with our buddy Connor Riley of Dog Nation. Make sure you give him a follow at K Connor Riley. When Billy Napier spoke, Connor, I don't know about you, I thought his tone and his tenor and the messaging came off as anything but positive. What are your thoughts?
I think Billy knows the situation that he's walking into, where the last five games of this season, he's got Georgia, LSU, Ole Miss, Texas, and Florida State. And if they don't win a lot on the front end to weather that back half of the schedule, you wonder how patient Florida's going to be. They've cycled through coaches since Urban Meyer obviously stepped away there. And you haven't seen the games that you've wanted to from Billy Napier. And I think a few years ago, we were maybe more understanding of, hey, we're going to have to build this slowly and build it the right way coming off the end of the Dan Mullen era. But in an age in college football where we saw TCU get to a national championship as a first-year head coach, where you see programs turn things around quickly, I just think that the patience model was the wrong way to go about it. And so two straight losing seasons, looking at a third with the schedule that they face, because as much as I mentioned those five teams at the end, Miami at home is a tough game. Texas A&M is a team that's going to have plenty of physicality under first-year coach Mike Elko. Tennessee is always a game with them, and Kentucky has given them a lot of problems in recent years. Florida has the talent, and they have improved to get to a 7-8 win area, but I think for so long, Florida hasn't been in that 7-8 window, and so unless it's something greater than that, there's still going to be questions lingering around Billy Napier, and I think that has reflected the overall vibe and tenor of this Florida program. I believe right now, only Vanderbilt has a worse high school recruiting class than Florida, and I think that just speaks to sort of the questions that we see surrounding Napier and his future and the uncertainty with it.
Another team with questions, but not nearly as many, is going to be how Kalen DeBoer does in his first year as the HC at Alabama. I thought his press conference was fine. I didn't think it was overly invigorating if I'm an Alabama fan. I thought there was a lot of, and understandably so, praising and kowtowing, dare I say, a bit to Nick Saban. What did you make of his opening remarks as the first time being the HC at Alabama?
Yeah, Nick Saban still looms large over that program. He loomed large all week, and SEC Media Days, he was obviously there as an analyst. I got a chance to sort of see him watch very intently when Kirby Smart gave his speech on Tuesday. And look, this is obviously Kalen DeBoer's program now. He's running it. Nick has talked about how he interacts with the players in and around the program. But this whole first season, until I think Kalen goes out and really establishes his own identity and what he is as a coach, the shadow of Nick Saban is going to loom. And they're going to have plenty of opportunity in big games to do it. I think that game against Georgia on September 28th is going to go a long way in sort of letting us know how not just Kalen DeBoer is as a coach at Alabama, but how the Alabama fan base feels about Kalen DeBoer, because Alabama obviously owned Georgia under Nick Saban. And we'll see if Kalen DeBoer, with a very talented Alabama team, one that I think is maybe being a little bit underrated at this point in time, just in terms of raw talent, we'll see how Kalen DeBoer is able to get this team ready to go against a Georgia team that was picked to win the SEC. You wonder if that would have been the case if Nick Saban were still the head coach there in Tuscaloosa.
Nick Saban, like you said, loom large there. But another guy that decided to loom large was Lane Kiffin. He made some interesting comments to Paul Feinbaum, sort of calling him out. And it didn't appear to be, in my opinion, Connor, that tongue-in-cheek when he asked Feinbaum, what are you good at, in response to a question about his legacy as a coach. If you're an Ole Miss player, what do you think about the way that your head coach handled that?
I think it's important to note here, you know, like Lane Kiffin just lost his dad this past week. And so, you know, you wonder where he is and what he's going through. And I would like to think that we're all able to give him some leeway in terms of what he is dealing with this at this point in time. As far as the Feinbaum, you know, interaction there, I think it's easy sometimes for media members to forget that, like, their words have real consequence and real value on people. And I'm sure that, you know, yes, as difficult as that time at USC was for Lane Kiffin, Paul Feinbaum sort of piling on did not make it easier. And, you know, Paul, I think in some ways used Lane to prop himself up. And I personally, I don't have a problem with Lane coming with receipts and pushing back against Paul, because I think Lane has done a good job reinventing himself at Ole Miss. You know, back to a 10-win season a season ago, they've got a chance to make the college football playoff this season. And, you know, calling Lane Kiffin the Miley Cyrus of college football, I mean, Miley Cyrus won a Grammy last year and is one of the great artists we have right now. So I think it's one of those things that, yes, the frostiness of it certainly drew a lot of attention there. But I think Lane and Paul probably have a deeper relationship than maybe we're quite willing to see there. And Paul and Lane willing to throw punches in a way that Paul certainly was over a decade ago.
If I gave you Billy Napier or Sam Pittman as the guy most likely to lose his job first, if at all, who would you take?
I will say first Sam Pittman, only because it seemed that they were very close to pulling that trigger a season ago. It would not surprise me in the slightest if both Arkansas and Florida have openings after this season. But I think with the way that Florida's schedule sets up, I think that he's at least going to make it into November. I think with Sam Pittman, if things go off the rails quickly, I don't think Arkansas is going to hesitate to move on, only because we know that they've opened up the idea that they might be looking for a replacement after the end of last season. And, you know, Georgia fans obviously know Sam well. They're rooting for him. That Arkansas job is just a really difficult job, and maybe the hope now, and at the SEC with the schedule changing and not being the SEC West every year, the schedule balances itself out a little bit more. But with Texas and Oklahoma coming in and the ties that Arkansas has to those two programs, I don't know how much easier their schedule is ever going to get in that regard. So I think with Sam, you know, yes, he had some bright moments at Arkansas, but I think the end of the road might be approaching for Coach Pittman.
Wrapping up our conversation with Connor Riley, give him a follow at K Connor Riley and check out his work at Dog Nation. And of course, his spot every Monday on Dukes and Bell, which we always look forward to. All right. I think the under the radar, I think maybe slightly under the radar, because I do think they've gotten some deserved praise, is Mizzou. I thought Eli Drinkwitz handled himself well at the podium. He's never going to be a guy that, you know, blows you out of the way with his excitement, but he's very composed and very smart, and you can tell he knows what he's doing. And I think between Brady Cook and Luther Burden, they're going to have a pretty damn good offense. What are your thoughts on Mizzou?
Yeah, I think Missouri is in a really interesting spot where obviously they have a great season last year. They beat Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl, and that brings a lot of excitement into this season. They do have to replace a lot of key pieces on defense, but I think you're absolutely right in bringing up the Brady Cook-Luther Burden connection. There was not a player on offense that Georgia faced last season that they were more worried about or schemed more, try to do more to take him out than Luther Burden of Missouri. And I know for a fact they're very glad to not be playing Missouri this year, a team that has given them problems in the last two seasons. I think the thing that makes this year more interesting for Missouri, their schedule along with Ole Miss's sets up very nicely for them to possibly make a college football playoff push. They're not as talented as Texas, Alabama, Georgia. They're not in that weight class. But because of the schedule that they have, they might be able to navigate that and find themselves at the end of the year 9-3, 10-2. And if you're able to do that against an SEC schedule, albeit a more watered-down one, I think you've got a chance to possibly push your way into the college football playoff. So it would not surprise me in the slightest if one of Ole Miss or Missouri at the end of the season, two teams we don't necessarily associate with the top of the SEC, maybe not necessarily in the SEC championship game, but in that like 7-8-9 range where they are comfortably in the college football playoff because they are able to rack up wins in the SEC. I think one of those teams is going to be able to do it.
Appreciate the time as always, Connor. Looking forward to hearing you with the guys on Monday.
Yep, looking forward to it as well.
All right, that is our very good friend Connor Riley, K. Connor Riley on Twitter.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.